This is episode 152 on March 3rd, 2016.
Set your photo apps down, iPhone photographers. It's time for Tiny Shutter Podcast.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Tiny Shutter Podcast, where we talk about iPhone photography and other things. I'm Joseph Ferreira.
And I am Matt Hoffman.
Welcome back, Matt.
Welcome, Joe. Good to be with you again on this lovely Thursday evening.
I know. And you know what? I don't know if there's a debate going on, but it seems like we always find out, oh, you're recording during the debates. I'm like, oh, there's a debate? But
Joe, there's always a debate.
Yeah, I know.
Even when there's not a debate, there's a debate. See, we're being told in the chat that there's a debate.
Dang it, I knew it. Well, one of these days they'll stop debating. Maybe not. But how are you doing, man? How was your week?
Week was not too shabby, I suppose. Did a little bit of photography. Did some still lifes for our Tiny Shutter weekly challenge. Woo-hoo. And that was actually pretty fun. And in the process of doing that, I uncovered a handful of pictures of myself from when I was just a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of fun to look back on those and see my grandparents, you know, when they were in their 50s, and my parents when they're in their 20s. And that was pretty cool.
Nice.
What else? I got a new, it's not a new book, but a new to me book in the mail today. It's by a designer and photographer. His name is, I might be butchering his last name, but it's Dan Marcolina.
Huh.
And the book's called iPhone Obsessed: Photo Editing Experiments with Apps. And basically what it is, it's a book where he spent a year photographing with the iPhone, and basically, you know, coming up with like these highly stylized photos where, you know, he used nothing but the iPhone and then the apps that were available at the time. This book came out in 2011, so it's kind of dated, but a majority of the apps are still available and still somewhat relevant today. And I bought it more for like inspiration. It's kind of an inspiration and educational kind of book or whatever. So I'm looking forward to diving into this and getting some more ideas on how to, you know, post-process my photos, and should be cool.
Nice. Yeah, 2011. Oh, that is like so iPhone 4. 4S.
Yeah, you know, but a lot of the apps that we still use today were available then. I mean, you know, Snapseed was out then, and granted, Snapseed was a lot different than it is now, but you know, just looking through the book real quick, I mean, I spotted, you know, just a handful of apps that I have on my phone now. True HDR, Photoshop Express, which you have.
Yes, right? I love that one.
And then there's like Tilt Shift apps, and I saw Tiffin Photo Effects, which I had no idea was around back then, but that's an app that I really like a lot.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, there's a lot of things, like a lot of the apps that kind of have, or the photos in his book that have kind of grungy type effects. Even if the app that he used to create the look isn't available anymore, there's like 4 million other apps that out there now that do the same thing, you know? So it's really more of a, I guess for me, it was really, I bought this more for inspiration.
Nice.
Yeah. So looking forward to diving into this. And if you start seeing some different stuff from me in our Facebook group and Instagram and Flickr, you'll probably know why. It's because I'm emulating techniques from this book.
Well, I can't wait for one day when you put out a book on how to post-process your images.
Yeah, that actually will probably never happen.
Oh, come on.
But it, in that vein, I really, really, really do need to get things in gear here and start making some videos, because I do get asked a lot about how I, you know, how I edit my pictures, and a lot of times it's like too complicated to like type it out, you know, just in Facebook and be like, you know, in this app I used this filter and I dialed it down to this percentage and used this blending mode and I masked it and all that kind of stuff. It'd be way easier to make a video and, you know, just show people.
Well, two, post-processing is subjective. It's subjective by taste. I know when Lightroom and prior to that, Photoshop, people were selling presets because their images looked good. And then people thought, oh, yeah, if I get those presets, my images would look good, too. When they probably bought them, which I don't, I'm not saying don't buy presets. But a lot of times the subject and the composition is 90% of what the image is. And presets are something that photographers use so that they don't have to keep adjusting every single image to get them to look a certain way. If they have all their images are the same lightings, the same scenario, and they want this certain look, then they apply the preset to whatever images they want. But I don't know if an actual, this is what I do, unless it was something that had to do with, say, taking objects out of the image, and you're using specific apps for that. Or like what you have is you apply sometimes effects that add, like, say, planets or stars or anything like that into your images. Those are cool too, but I think a lot of times it's subjective to the way we feel at the time, what's in our mind's eye, and that doesn't always match up with everyone else.
Yeah, and not only that, another thing that I've been thinking about a lot in relation to this video thing is I could show a video on how I edit.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's the only way to achieve whatever look that I achieved. And right. It might not even be the best or most efficient way.
Right.
You know what I mean? I do a lot of jumping around back and forth in between different apps. And, I might have a start off in Nlight and then I end up in Mextures. And then I go back into Nlight to do one thing. And then I'm back in another app doing something else. And then I'm, either in Image Blender or Nlight again, blending two different, photos that were edited slightly different, but I'm blending them for some reason or another. And, it gets really crazy.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing that I do on my images that will sometimes not make sense, but there's a method behind the madness. The Photoshop Express, the one that you mentioned earlier, I use that to remove noise from the image. It has a noise reduction feature, which I absolutely love. And I take it to the extreme, almost. I'll take it almost as far as I think and then dial it back a little bit. But then I'll go into another, I may use that one, or go into another app, and I'll add noise back into it, because I hate the iPhone's noise reduction software. To me, I think it ruins the image. So I reduce the noise out of it, which makes it almost a flat image. But then I'll go back and add other apps' noise so that it gives it a more organic feel. Instead of it looking blotchy or painting like, I will add that sort of the noise that looks like fine dust or whatever it is onto the image, so that there is a little bit of grittiness and depth to the image. Tony in the chat room asks, "What do you mean by noise?" Noise are anomalies that you don't see with your eye, but they show up in the image. And it could be color discoloration. Say you're in low light, the camera is trying to pull out details out of low light, and so you get what looks like noise on the image in the way of discoloration. Or if you go back to film days, noise was, you know, tiny microscopic blotches that were on there because there was literally no light hitting something like that. But noise was something that is an anomaly in the image that tends to distract from what the image is, mainly because of low light. Is that what you would say, Matt?
Yeah, that's definitely one cause of it. That type of noise is generally like that low light noise is usually because the iPhone is boosting the ISO.
Yeah.
Which is essentially like boosting the gain. And it's trying to create light that isn't there. So sometimes it doesn't know what color those pixels should be. So like in your shadow areas, you'll see, you know, magenta or cyan or something like that. And it just looks weird, you know.
Yeah. Matt DeVore said it's a graininess. That's another word for the noise. A lot of the old film, black and whites or whatever, in low light conditions had a graininess to the images. And it is distracting, but a lot of times we throw that stuff in there because it creates a mood or an effect. It's funny, we joked about... We pay hundreds of millions of dollars for engineers to go in and remove the noise or the graininess from the images, just to turn around and spend a couple dollars on an app that would throw it right back in there. You know, it's kind of one of those things where you think, oh yeah, why am I putting this on here?
It's a different noise though.
It is.
The apps are putting back in. It's more of what Matt said. It's a grain.
Yeah.
So it's not the color noise. Anyone that's adding color noise should not be allowed to own an iPhone.
No. No. Oh, that's funny. Very cool. Well,
yeah, I definitely go out of my way to remove noise. In any app that tries to add it makes me angry.
And I'm over here removing it and then throwing it right back in. But I am changing it up. It is a different feel. And, you know, because I wanted to add the depth to the somewhat flat image. So.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. I was, let's see here. This week I was taking some images of my kids. They're playing. They're getting bigger, and I send images to my family in California so that they can see the kids getting bigger and bigger, and you know, incentivize them wanting to come out and visit us. But I I enjoyed our weekly photo challenge. It was a little bit of a challenge to come up with a good idea, something that, you know, most people wouldn't do, but I'm looking forward to talking about our challenge coming up shortly. So, well, do you think we should go ahead and move into the news?
We should totally do that.
All right, here we go.
News team, assemble!
All right, we had a submission into our Facebook group, and Dave in the chat room, I believe, had posted this, but it is some Apple leaks about the new iPhone. And so Matt, for some reason, thought this would be a good idea to talk about, because we do talk about iPhones. But Matt, why don't you go ahead and let people know what we are talking about?
Yeah, normally I don't care to talk about like rumors yes. and stuff that much, but I don't know, for some reason this one's intriguing. So this was an article in Forbes, and the headline is Apple leak confirms massive new iPhone 7. So at first I got all excited. I was like, oh my gosh, are they actually going to make a 5.9 or like 6-inch screen phone? Because if they did, I would totally want it. Like, you know, the iPhone 6S Plus, it's plenty big at 5.5 inches. But seriously, if they made a bigger one, you know, not iPad mini big, but bigger, I would still think that it was usable. And I would like it. So it turns out that's not at all what they meant. Basically, the article centers around an Apple analyst named Ming-Chi Kuo. I think I said that right.
Sure, I'll take that.
Cool, good. I've been brushing up on my
Chinese.
Yeah, we'll assume that that's what that is. Anyway, he has a pretty good track record when it comes to predicting what the next iPhone is going to have as far as features go. So supposedly he got his hands on some sort of research note that indicates that Apple's going to release three different iPhone 7 models. So you'll have your 4.7 inch iPhone 7, your 5.5 inch iPhone 7 Plus, and then another version of the 7 Plus, which for all intents and purposes of this article, they're calling the iPhone 7 Pro.
Right.
Right. So the difference between the Pro and the Plus is something that we discussed on this show a few months back, and that is basically the dual lens camera system that's created by the company called Lynx, I believe is how it's pronounced. It's a company, I believe it's Israeli company that Apple acquired at some point last year.
Linux or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I want to say it's Lynx just because otherwise, it sounds too much like Linux.
Which, yeah, for trucks.
You don't want to get it confused with that. that takes the iPhone in a totally different direction.
It would keep your iPhone very safe. You wouldn't be able to see the screen, but.
So what's the big deal about the dual lens camera system? Well, It hopefully will be a faster camera. It'll excel in low light situations, so you won't have that noise that we were talking about just, you know, a few minutes ago.
Yeah,
and also the dual lens system is able to incorporate some optical zoom.
Ooh, okay,
you know, so that is pretty cool. And in this article, they mentioned like a 2 to 3 time optical zoom.
Yes. Do you think they would incorporate, say, better depth of field? Or would that require more software to try to distinguish between foreground and background and utilizing the depth of field?
I think no matter what, regardless of the zoom, the depth of field is still going to be dependent on the relationship between the distance relationship between your lens and your subject and the subject and the background.
Yeah.
So no matter whether you're shooting just normally or zoomed, the closer your subject is to the lens and the further the background is from the subject, then the less depth of field you'll have.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is, I think, what you're going for.
Yeah.
Right. Another thing they mentioned in this article that, to me, it's really not a big deal, but for some reason, it seems that a lot of people that write about the newer iPhones are hung up on this. But this Lynx camera technology, I suppose, would enable the camera to be flat again on the phone, so you won't have that little ring that bulges out. It doesn't bother me in the slightest bit, and that's mostly because my case covers it up, so I don't even really notice it.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you how many articles I've read where they mention it, so apparently it's a big deal. So I read this article, and I thought, okay, that would be pretty cool if they do that. But one of the things that kind of bummed me out a little bit is the way they worded this phone. They kind of worded it calling it a super premium phone. So that kind of bums me out because, in my opinion, like the iPhone 7 Plus, let's say that's what it's going to be called, it's probably going to be a pretty freaking expensive phone. Like, I know my 6S Plus was certainly not a cheap piece of equipment.
Right.
So to have another phone that's going to be above that, you know, in terms of like specs and probably cost even more, I mean, I think they're going to start putting it out of reach for a lot of people. Probably myself included, because at some point there's a ceiling, you know, right, for me, and we're just about there currently.
Yeah.
You know, so I know I'm really hoping that it's just an iPhone 7 and iPhone 7 Plus. If one's going to have a different camera than the other, then obviously I hope the 7 Plus has the dual camera. But of course, I don't even know if I'm going to upgrade this next phone. So, you know, I got maybe another year or two to think about it. But I'm intrigued, and I kind of hope the rumors are true, but I hope not at the added expense, basically.
Right.
What do you think about all this?
I'm in the same boat with you. I like the 6. The 6 is a phone that I can carry in my pocket. I have, you know, it's comfortable in my hand. I don't really have the need to go much bigger than the 6S. The Plus, because I don't know. I think that the one that I have is okay. Would I want there to be better technology in the next iPhone? Absolutely. And I feel the same way about your feelings on putting it above and beyond, making it more premium than it actually is. Because the iPhone, I think, is a premium product compared to a lot of the other manufacturers. To call it a pro, I'm still kind of sketchy on that, because in all honesty, if everybody has a Pro, is it really a Pro? Or is it just a better iPhone?
Like I said, it's just what they dubbed it in the article. It's
right.
Probably not what...
And the other rumor that I don't know if you had mentioned, but they're talking about going to a iPhone 5-sized option. And
yes, but that's separate from this.
It is separate from this. Would they have four different models to choose from, or would they keep it to two or three? That's why I bring it up. Why have four different models? There's really no need to have four models. We've had three at the most, and to be honest, the 5C did okay. It wasn't something I think Apple was jumping up and down saying, oh, we did it with the 5C, because we didn't see another 6C. So
yeah, I don't know if I would say they did okay with the 5C, because they didn't continue it.
Right.
And I think I've maybe seen one in the wild.
I have one. And
well, okay, you're the only person in South Carolina that has
one. Right, exactly. No, I think I say okay because I've seen a lot in the wild, mainly kids.
No, those were regular iPhones with cases on them.
Yeah, but no, if it was something that was going to be successful, I think they would, or if it was successful, they would have continued it. Would they continue giving an option for a smaller one than the flagships? Maybe. And that's one of the rumors, but I just don't see them having four different ones. So I hope that the 7 Plus is the one with the dual camera system. Because it is a much larger phone. Would I buy it? Maybe not. I didn't get the Plus with the optical stabilization, and I still haven't really tested a Plus to see what the difference is between the 6 and the 6 Plus. Or the 6S and the 6S Plus. So, I don't know. I want to see them innovate, and dual lenses would be an innovation. Third-party manufacturers create lens systems for them? I don't think so. I don't think they could do that.
I mean, the only thing that you'd really be giving up is the wide angle. You know what I mean? Like right now, in my current situation, I almost don't even care about my wide angle lens.
Uh-huh.
But I absolutely love my telephoto lens.
Yeah.
That the telephoto lens I have is essentially a two-time... It's not really a zoom, but you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, it magnifies... two times. If they could build that in, then I don't need the accessory lenses.
Right.
There might be times when I'm like, well, I really wish I could
macro,
you know, have a wide angle lens for this shot or whatever. But, man, I don't know. I'm excited. I think the dual lens stuff seems really intriguing. There's probably a lot of stuff they could do with it that I'm just not even aware of yet. I even think there's some phones starting to pop out, you know, on the Android side that have dual lens. I was just starting to look it up, but I think somebody, I don't remember who, but somebody just released a phone or just announced a phone that had a dual lens.
There was actually a phone that intrigued me. I was listening to a podcast and they mentioned HP's new flagship phone that's coming out. That's a Windows phone. You know, I have PCs. I use Windows all the time. And the one thing that I'm always doing is trying to get Windows on a smaller device. I have my HP Stream 7, which I got for $99 brand new from the Microsoft store. And I have Windows 10 on it. I have full-blown desktop. And to have a full-blown desktop on my phone, to me, is exciting. I like that. The fact that I don't have to carry my 17-inch laptop and I can keep everything all in one, have it be my phone, my camera, and my computer, is, to me, very attractive. Is Apple going to get there? No, maybe, but not in the near future, because they want everything to be separate. They're not HP, which HP wants to sell, you know, computers. Apple wants to keep things separate so that people can buy that and this and that. And they have the loyalty. They can do that. I wouldn't be surprised if other manufacturers will come out with a twin lens feature. And actually, maybe it was... No, I'm thinking of the Lumias with the bulging lens, the optical zoom lens that had it. So, but yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on this. I think we'll hopefully be pleasantly surprised, or we'll be like, yeah, we knew that was coming. But
yeah, we'll see. I know something got announced. I just don't know what it was. It's escaping me. It's, you know, it was on the Android side, which is why I don't know what it was.
Right. Oh, Dave posted something in the go to link. Is it safe, Dave? Let's see here. Huawei.
I had a feeling it was them.
Yep. Huawei dual cameras, aluminum case.
No, I don't know if this is what I was thinking of. I don't know. It's hard to say, but it's coming. One way or another, dual lenses are coming.
Yep.
So it's kind of like, it's funny. I actually have a camera. It's right here on my desk. It's probably from the 50s.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Kodak Duaflex 2.
Is it a rangefinder?
Or
is it just a point and shoot type?
I think it's just a point and shoot type. Yeah, it's just a point and shoot, but you look down through the top.
So you're
basically, there's one lens that, you know, has like the shutter mechanism and everything behind it to expose the film, but you're actually looking down through the top of the camera and then out a second lens that's just above the lens that actually takes the photo.
Okay, yeah.
So one is more or less a viewfinder, but it's kind of like, it looks like two lenses.
Yes.
On the front of the camera. It's a neat little camera. Maybe that'll be one of my next subjects for a still life picture.
Yeah. Matt DeVore posted a Petapixel article just after Dave did. It was the Leica's smartphone, the Huawei P9. Same thing as what Dave had posted. Yeah. I'm looking forward to what is going to be coming out soon. I am glad that manufacturers are thinking of us when it comes to their phones. It used to be the camera was just a feature they added, and there was really no thought in quality. It was just like, oh yeah, well, we have this camera on the phone now and you can take video or take still images, and then it's eventually just, it's trickled down and became a an avalanche in our favor of devices that we can now take these beautiful images with and be able to create art. So I am truly excited to see what's going to happen.
Good things are coming our way.
Yep. Well, speaking Alrighty. Of art, I thought we could... Well, did you have anything else that you wanted to bring up, or should we go ahead and get to our post pick of the week?
Post pick of the week, sir.
All right, let's do it. If I have it queued up. Here we go.
Post pick of the week.
All right. So this week's weekly photo challenge was called Still Life, and I brought up the definition of still life from the Magic Wikipedia, and it says still life photography is a genre of photography used for the depiction of inanimate objects subjects. Let me start over. Depiction of inanimate subject matter, typically of small group of objects. It is the application of photography to the still life artistic style. An example is food photography. So, still life is an interesting concept because a lot of times we go and we will take a picture of something and we think of it as being an everyday type thing, whereas still life is an everyday type thing. It's usually a centerpiece or, like it said, a group of similar objects. And, you know, you can apply art to it. And you think of the paintings, the painters of old, and how they would take a table and put fruit and arrange it in a way that you look at it and go, oh, I wish that was real. I could just take a bite out of it. It looks so good. You know, these things that we do in photography aren't new. A lot of these are taken from painters and how they used their painting to create art. And we do the same thing with our phones. if only they knew how easy it was. So still life is interesting. We had some good submissions. What did you think of the challenge, Matt?
It was hard.
Yeah.
You know, I don't do a lot of still life photography myself, so it was it was different. And it's just hard. I think it's one of those ones where you kind of need to research it a little bit to kind of get a feel for what the genre is all about.
Yeah.
So, you know, I knew going into it like what a typical still life image is.
Yeah.
And I thought about setting up something to that effect, you know, like some kind of artsy fartsy mug or glass and flowers and stuff like that. But that's not really my style, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, well, there's no reason why some old camera equipment can't be used for still life.
Woo-hoo.
So it was fun though. I really enjoyed it. And actually, I did put a smidgen of effort into this.
Yeah.
I actually did buy some stuff to create the shot.
Nice.
Basically, my backgrounds, I had to go and purchase. So I went to a craft store, and I bought a roll of burlap material. And then I also bought, it's like a 2-foot by 2-foot square. It's basically just like some boards that are more or less nailed together, but I wanted wood for the background.
Yeah.
And I figured that was the easiest way to do that was to I wasn't really sure how I was going to do it. And then in the craft store, I saw they just had like these, you know, it's flat, but it's just pieces of like, I don't know, 1x4s or something that were basically stapled together. And I was like, well, that's perfect. Yeah. Cool. So I got one of those, got some burlap. I was good to go.
Yeah, I like, I love your arrangement. I love the fact that you have film in there, unused, and some of it looks used.
Yeah, one roll was used. It was actually in the Pentax K1000, and I'm like, well, I don't think we're ever going to develop this, so yes. I'm going to sacrifice it. And then I was looking through a box in my basement and found an unused roll. I don't even know what that film is. It might have been color film.
It's black and white, 125px.
That's it is? Okay. Yeah, the other film was actually...
Tri-X 400.
It was one of my favorites when I was shooting film was Tri-X 400.
Do they still make the Tri-X?
I don't know. Does Kodak make film still?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I had no clue.
Yeah. Film is still alive, barely, but it's still alive. Yeah, no, I love your arrangement. You know, you just, I love old cameras. I actually almost pulled out my cameras and set them up, but I was like, yeah, I always do that. And I needed to kind of do something different. My image was... sort of, I tried to make it thought-provoking, a little provocative.
Just because you put some bullets
in know. I know. To me, it's not provocative, but some people have feelings or, you know, they have thoughts on guns, and I'm okay with that. Because, you know, we can have a difference of opinion, but it was like, should I put it in or shouldn't I? And I was like, you know what? I'm going to put it in. So I had some bullets. I have a copy of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And in it has the Bill of Rights and the amendments to the Constitution. And part of it, you know, as a photographer, we love the First Amendment. For us, the First Amendment is something that we fight for because not only is photography free speech, but it's also it has to do with freedom of the press. And, you know, those are sacred rights that we hold to because anytime... a group of people or a body try to suppress, they try to remove speech, because if you can stop speech, you can keep people from communicating with each other. And when you keep people from communicating with each other, you can divide them and divide and conquer. So in the United States, we our First Amendment has to do with religion, speech, and press, and all that. So I took the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. I placed it sort of in the middle, and then I had my microphone that I use for podcasting in the shot as a representation of free speech. I had a roll of film. Sort of like what you have in yours, as a representation of free speech also. And then I had my old iPhone as a representation of press. Because what is freedom of the press? A lot of people don't think about it. Freedom of the press was back in the 18th century, almost 19th century, the printing press was the mass media. It was what somebody can take their thoughts and create mass amounts of paper to be able to pass out so that people didn't have to write it all out and copy it by hand. It was done automatically. That's where we get newspapers from. And, you know, today our websites are the modern equivalent of the printing press. We don't have to keep creating different sites. There, it goes out in mass quantities just once. You don't have to keep replicating it. So I wanted to be able to take a thought, a subject, and incorporate those all together into the image, so that, you know, it was related, even though they're totally separate, they're totally different subjects or thoughts. So I hope everybody's not totally confused, but
you had me at First Amendment.
Okay, good. So all right.
The suspense is killing me.
Yes. It was funny. Before we started recording, we were like, oh, yeah, it's your turn. Oh, wait, no, it's my turn. Wait, no, it's your turn. We always forget whose turn it is to pick the post pick of the week. It is my turn. And so what we've done lately is we try to guess what the other person's going to pick. And actually, Matt nailed it. So I want to give him kudos because we picked the same image. The image that I chose, oops, and I just lost it. Here we go. The image that I chose was done by Shayna Shulman. And it is an image of some flowers. They're purple with some the yellow center in an arrangement. But like Matt told me earlier, he thinks that the process that she did with the image is what made it stand out. So she said that she did this with an iPhone 4S. She used Snapseed, Tangled Effects, Mixtures, and a new one that I don't think I've heard of, but Matt heard of, is called Stackables. And it's a beautiful image. It's it takes up the lower two-thirds, and it has empty space. What's that called? Negative space.
Negative space.
Thank you.
There you go.
It has some negative space in it. It's got different shades. It has, I think, complementary colors to the surrounding of the image that it has with the flowers. And I think it's a beautiful image. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm digging it like a lot. I just really love the treatment. For some reason, I just really like flower photos that kind of have a soft color palette to them, you know, not a lot of contrast or anything like that. I think this one, the way she edited this photo, she really just nailed it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It does have kind of a painterly look to it. Actually, it has a lot of a painterly look to it, and that's, I think, from her use of tangled effects. The app Stackables, I'm really getting into. I just recently came across this app, and I don't remember how. It had something to do with that photo I created this past week. I posted it in our Facebook group and on Flickr and stuff. It's the one with it's sepia toned. It's like a big tree and there's some birds flying by.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I did some of I must have done the sepia tone or something I did something to that picture in Stackables. I forget what I did. But I played with it a lot. In fact, both of the still life images I did, I did most of the treatment to those in Stackables. And basically what Stackables is, it's a filters app. It's textures and effects and stuff of that nature. But the thing that's really cool about it is everything that you do can be like on its own layer.
Yeah.
And it does it like in a non-destructive manner. And there's just all kinds of adjustments and stuff that you can do. So, you can adjust the opacity of the filter that you're using or the texture that you're using. There's some other adjustments that you can do also. It's opacity and saturation basically for almost like every filter, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, you can have, I don't even know how many layers that you can actually do, but, there might not even be a limit to how many layers you could have, but there's tons and tons of textures and filters and effects in this app. It's $2.99 in the App Store, and there are some in-app purchases like to get all the stuff. I think it's like another like $3.99. So it's not, as far as like iPhone apps go, it's not cheap. but you can do a lot with this app. So I don't know how this app I think has been around for quite a while, and I don't know how I didn't know about it till now.
Yeah. It's funny, you were mentioning the price, and then Tony in the chat says, all these apps add up. And I'm like, yeah, they do. I'd actually hate to see what the running total is with iTunes on how much I've spent on apps. And I know that you're probably in the same boat that that I am.
Yeah, probably more so.
Yeah,
I think it's so. It's just like... like not to go off on a tangent about how much apps cost, but like it's so, in my opinion, it's so easy to forget like which ones are free and which ones yes. cost money. The other day I was showing a coworker, we'll just call him a coworker for ease of the conversation. I was showing him an app. It's kind of like a weather related app. And it's really, really cool. It's called Living Earth.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, check this out. Here's like what it shows you. And then you could have all these different views. You could look at like, temperature gradients and wind gradients for like the whole globe. It's really pretty neat, right? And I said, yeah, I think it's free. So he pulls it up in the App Store and it was like $5.
Yes.
Yes. I'm like, oh my gosh, I get too many apps. I can't keep it straight.
Well, if you're new to iPhone photography, or even if you have an Android, it used to be that Snapseed was $4.99, and now it's free. Ever since Google purchased Snapseed, it became a free download. But back before Google bought it, it was worth it because it was a tremendous app. I paid the $4.99. I know there was a lot of people that were able to pick it up when it was like the free app of the day, and they were able to get it. But I did not feel bad at all by paying $4.99, and it kind of puts things in perspective a little bit. It's like used to be, we'd pay $50 to $200 to $600 for a piece of software that would go on our computer, and that was a necessity. And then we start complaining when we pay $1.99 for an app, but But it does add up, and sometimes you're like, oh, that might be good, but oh yeah, I don't know if I'd really want to buy that because I don't know how often I would actually use it. So a lot of times I base it on would I really use it? Or is it something that I would use? If not, then I wouldn't buy it. If it was something I thought I would use all the time, absolutely. I'll pay, you know, $1.99, $2.99, $3.99 for the app. Because, you know, if I think it's of worth and that I would use it, absolutely. It's definitely worth it.
Yeah. Every now and then I get one that's a dud and I get kind of angry that I spent the money. But for the most part, I think I get my money's worth out of the apps I buy.
Yeah. And here's the thing about Apple's app ecosystem compared to Google or Windows. Most of Apple's apps on the app store cost money, but it's also where most of the growth and development is. Now, not to take away from Google Play or anything like that, or actually, we will say Microsoft is not that good, but where you find people paying for the apps is where the developers want to be, because they have to eat, you know, just like photographers. Photographers, you know, if they're making, if they're in the business of photography, they have to charge their customers so that they can pay their rent, they can eat food, they can put clothes on themselves. It's the same thing for app developers. A lot of times app developers will gamble. They'll say, we'll make it free, and hopefully a big giant like Google or Adobe or somebody like that may see worth in it and buy us out. And then they get a payday. Or they turn around and they clutter their app with ads, hoping that, you know, the ad market is good enough so that they can pay their bills. So when they charge, I don't feel bad for paying for an app, because I know that I would want to eat also if I was putting all my time and effort into an app. Now you say, yeah, there's venture capitalists and all that, blah, blah, blah. But still, it's is it worth it? Is it worth paying the $1.99? If it is, buy it. If not, don't buy it. So just my 2 cents.
That was more than 2 cents.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, cool. Congratulations, Shayna. Beautiful image. It is a true honor to be able to choose these images, because I have fun telling people about the podcast and what the listeners are doing. And without the listeners, we'd just be another podcast. And so you guys add depth and content to our show. And we love having you guys be a part of it. So, all right, Matt, what is this next week's weekly photo challenge? I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, boy. Let's see. Something easy, like trees.
Trees? You wanted to say landscapes.
No.
Oh, okay.
Trees.
Trees. You want trees?
Yeah. Kind of.
Okay. You know, 70-30, yay, nay. 50-50, yay, nay.
I should have thought about this.
We can do trees. I just want to make sure that you are, you know, thrilled with your...
I am, actually, because we just got a couple votes in the chat room for it.
Okay, good. We'll do trees.
Yeah, I think trees is good. I think we should do trees.
Hopefully you're not in, like, Adak, Alaska, where there's only, like, 5 or 6 of them. But
or like Death Valley or something.
Yeah. My father-in-law was stationed in ADAC, and before he got there, they were like, oh yeah, where you're going, there's a woman behind every tree. He gets there, there's like 13. And he's like, what? All right. Well, cool. All right. So we'll do trees for our this week's weekly photo challenge. If you want to participate, go on to Facebook and look for the pinned post. That is usually where we keep the weekly photo challenge, and put your images in. We are also looking at utilizing Flickr.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. And actually, there is an option that I think we may have, and I wanted to see what you thought. Let's see here. If you go to the group, there is a place where we can start discussions.
Yeah.
And I believe in the discussions,
I'm way ahead of you.
We can post images, right?
I'm way ahead of you.
Okay. Did you already start a discussion?
Not for trees, but I did start a discussion where basically I explained that from here on out, I will start a new discussion for the current
Woo-hoo!
Challenge. And it has instructions on how to post your image in a discussion.
Oh, awesome. There we go. Yeah. Post an image so, in discussion thread.
If you visit the Flickr page, you will see that and you'll be impressed.
Sweet. Yeah. No, that's great. How's it going with Flickr?
It's going. I need everyone to tell their friends.
Yeah.
So I want to definitely want to build up the membership. We're at 23 members and 134 photos, which isn't too, that's not too bad.
No. And this is only the second week, so.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So
I'm not too concerned.
Our good buddy Mark Sadowski finally joined Woo-hoo! The group today.
Yeah, he did that today. That's awesome.
But yeah. There's a lot of cool pictures in there, so keep posting away.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only other thing I want to say about it real quick is I do have it set up to where I have to approve the pictures. And that's basically just so I can make sure that in case someone decides to post something not appropriate, I will literally be the only person to see it. So I don't have to subject everybody to things that
you're gonna take the offensive. Bullet.
So that being said, Flickr for some reason does not have a way to manage their groups via mobile.
So
like their mobile app has no way to manage groups. And I've also searched for maybe like a third party app. I thought I found one, but it doesn't really allow you to do anything. So, if you submit pictures and it takes a few hours for them to show up into the photo pool, that's why. Because I actually have to be at home on my computer to, approve the photos and get them into the group.
And the other thing about the mobile app is discussions are not an easy thing. I don't even think you can do discussions in the mobile
app. No, I found an app. It's called Flick Stacker.
Okay.
And through that app, you can get at the discussions.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, I'm hoping that Flickr will one day get with the 21st century and actually make a mobile app that will utilize the entire website. I mean, I do like the fact that it is a image-oriented app, but it is limited to what you can actually do in the group. So, yep, I'll I'll have to look for that other one too. I actually was using one. I don't know if it's still around, but I'll have to dig that one up too and see if see what it is. It may be the same one, but I can't recall. So, all right. Anything else that you wanted to mention?
Nope.
All right.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I got.
Well, cool. All right. Next week, I will actually not be here. I will be in the small state of Texas, in Dallas. And so I will be gone that Thursday. So actually, Mark is going to come and fill in, and there's going to be all sorts of shenanigans. So look forward for that. And yeah, so I look forward to seeing your guys' weekly photo challenge, and it should be interesting. Hopefully you can find a tree and go from there. So
yeah, Greg asked if it had to be deciduous or coniferous. And, it can be any kind of tree. It could be I don't care. It could be a palm tree. it doesn't matter to me. Any kind of tree.
It could be a drag strip light tree.
It could even be a bonsai tree.
Yeah. A money tree.
Which, seriously, that's a good idea, guys. A bonsai tree.
Yeah.
Because they're pretty dang cool looking.
If you could find a family tree.
No, let's keep it like an actual plant.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. So, all right. Well, cool. If you guys want to, okay, let me start over. Matt, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
Oh, you can check me out on Instagram, Twitter, IM, and Flickr at M Hoffman Photo.
Excellent. You can find me at Instagram, on Instagram, at Joseph Ferreira. And you can also find me in the Flickr group. Just find my name, and you can follow me there. If you want to find the show notes, the links to the groups, or even contact us through email, go to tinyshutter.com, and you will find everything there. That is our one-stop shop. And, you know, use it. It's a good resource. So, and if you guys are on the fence about joining any of the groups, you know, make that decision to jump off the fence and join the group. The more people we have in there, the more inspiration we get, the more camaraderie we have, and the more ideas we're able to pick up from everybody, because a lot of times questions are answered or asked and answered inside the groups, and they never make it to the show. Sometimes there's a good question that we do bring up on the show, but there's a wide wealth of knowledge and information just from our listeners and the people who are in the group. So I highly encourage you guys to go and join them, whether it's Flickr or Facebook, and you know, just participate. So, all right, Matt, anything else?
That's all I got.
All right. Well, it helps if I actually have this ready.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
All right. I've been a little light on the soundboard today, but that's okay because we had actually a good discussion. So
yeah, and there will be soundboard overload next week.
Kowalski, what's our trajectory? 95% certain this will end in massive, flaming disaster.
And the other 5%?
Irrelevant, sir.
Yes. Oh, I look forward to hearing that show. All right. Well, Matt, thanks for a good show. And say goodnight to everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Thank
you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, head over to iTunes and leave us a review and a 5-star rating. See you next week.
Everything's perfectly all right now. We're fine. We're all fine here now. Thank you. How are you?
This is a great shot, Mav. I should be a photographer.